right, and welcome back to A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where I, your host, Cole Prasinger, get to sit down with interesting people. We get to examine their businesses, what makes them tick, some of the problems that they face, and in today's episode, we're going to be learning a little bit more about what it takes to be a good entrepreneur. So today, I am sitting down with Sergey. Sergey, can you introduce yourself, where you work, and what you do?
Well, thanks for having me here. I'm thrilled and an honor to be here. This is great. So my name is Sergey Basantsev. I am an account manager for First American Title and Escrow Services here in Whatcom County. I am 3 months into a corporate venture of sorts where we are a corporate startup for a big national company. And we're bringing something new to Whatcom County.
So corporate startup, I know we talked about this like three episodes ago, but corporate startup, that seems like two contradicting terms. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So typically the way our industry works, and we have examples locally where a title insurance company, whether it be CW or Chicago or First American or Stewart, I mean, there's only a handful of them. They come in and they buy a local title company because they are the local talent and the local resource and the connection. And they say, hey, we're going to adopt you into our process. That's typically how it happens. My partners and I jumped ship from a competitor to start from scratch. And so with 0% market share on the real estate, you know, on the residential real estate, because there was no one here doing it. And so that's why it's a little corporate startup, because while we are backed and supported and bring the resources of First American, we are operating our own little operation here in Whatcom County from ground up. So we started with a rental unit, and now we've worked to a place where we have a storefront. And then, you know, next thing is growth and expansion with employees. We're hiring our first person.
That's exciting.
And so for in that case, that's all on us. Like, hey, our overhead is what I work to cover. And so our overhead is obviously pays everyone as well. But that is where, hey, if you don't make overhead, we have to pay them back.
Yeah.
You know, and so there is the sink or swim, because very quickly they're not afraid to pull away, and they've done it before. They've done it before in Whatcom County, where First American was here for a long time, a big presence. And then, like we talked about once, leadership matters. And when leadership disappeared, the ability to do business disappeared. And so First American left. They've done it before, both all title companies. Once they cut, they come to a bottom line that they're like, can't. Let the market, whatever, shift, or the local guys pick it up, but it just doesn't make sense. And so that's why it's a little corporate startup, where we're like, we're starting from scratch, and they're like, okay, well, this is what the bottom line is, and you don't have anything to work with.
So it really is sink or swim.
Yeah, totally.
So can you tell us the story?
First American title.
First American, okay. They were in Whatcom County before, but they left. Can you tell us the story as to why that happened?
Sure. So First American, we'll go back a little. First American is the oldest title company in America.
Oh.
1800s. Chicago Title comes from the big fire in Chicago City, where the city, what is it, courthouse burned down, or, you know, the courthouse burned down, and everyone's like, who owns what land? Hey, maybe someone should be in charge of that. Right. And then when people started selling, they're like, but I own that land. They're like, no, he, but the deed got lost in court,
right,
at the courthouse. So Chicago Title comes from the big Chicago fire. And so they've been around for a long time. And so historically, First American had an office and operation and market share, had employees here in Whatcom County. Until the attorney, well, the man leading the charge was like, hey, I'm going to be a practicing attorney, and I'm going to practice my own thing. And that created a management restructure, and management didn't thrive. And so some of those individuals now are working at the other two local companies, because leadership matters. And so that disintegrated their ability to do work here. And so they said, hey, we're going to close shop.
All right.
And they have always wanted to come back, but local talent matters a lot when you're in a relationship type, you know, business capacity. Like, our revenue stream is only coming from real estate agents, from brokers, from lenders, and some from attorneys.
So out of curiosity then, why didn't First American take someone who is based somewhere where they're already more prominent? Michigan, I don't know. Take someone from Michigan, they say, hey, we got a new ground that we want you to break. You're going to go over to Northwest Washington. Get her done.
Good question, actually. Thank you for asking that. It starts with me. Yes, which is fun. So when I went from a title officer position at the competitor, I became a sales guy, and I've never done sales before in my life. And so they put me through a 6-month course. It was very intensive. It was very intense. Like, we will dictate what you do all the time. For you to succeed in this coaching program, you have to do what I tell you what to do, or you're going to get fired.
Oh.
And I'm like, what you got to do? And the bar was actually very low.
Okay.
To my standards. So I was like, oh, that's what I got to do? I'll meet that. Check. And so I, in 6 months, passed the course really well. And I was going through some medical issues, and still I didn't lose momentum. And then I was put on a team, and like any team. Hey, the people that have done the work, I had 2 coworkers on my other spot, and they've done the work for so long that they have a book of business. Well, to put a third guy in, they have to take people from their book of business and say, let's give them these individuals. And again, the individual's already predetermined because that's how many licenses they are. So it's like, hey, these are your agents. And so I got a list of agents who don't do a lot of volume or don't use that title company. So they said, hey, these are unattainables. If you could win them over, that'll be great. These are people who aren't doing a lot. So if you could motivate them to do work, you get to win. So it was really like, hey, what you put in is what you get out. And I put in a whole lot, and I got a whole lot out, enough to say, maybe there's another option. And again, leadership matters. I'm going to say that over and over and over again, because at my previous employer, the longtime 30-year manager who was a boss, she retired and moved to Hawaii. And so now it's like, who's the vacuum? The vacuum was someone not local. You know, they got replaced in infill from a different state. And so the vibe was a little different. There's more restructuring because that's where most of America is. I mean, there's a big secession issue in a lot of industries, ours included. And so there was a shift in my job description changed. Oh, excuse me. I was given an option and an opportunity to be a manager, but not in a capacity that I wanted to. And so once that changed and I saw some stuff and I was like, hey, what are the other options out there? And so when First American became an option, the conversation was with me, and I was ready to be like, if I could talk to anyone in the county, because my book of business was like, hey, these are the only people you could talk to. But I'm like, but I want to talk to the people who do all the work. Well, the other guys, that's their business. So I can't really, there's like the respect. Well, I'm not here to poach clients from right. My teammates. So I said, hey, well, if I could call everyone and I have all the tools and resources that weren't available and there's this all this value, I'll jump ship alone. But then as leadership kept changing, the conversation was like, well, what if we were able to bring an escrow closer? And that wasn't even on their radar because it is almost impossible to poach an escrow closer.
Really?
Yeah. They typically switch from office to office. And they don't switch often because like my friend who went from back and forth, well, he's worth gold. And so the value of gold just rose up and you can't afford me anymore. So I'm going to jump over here and they're going to pay me my worth.
Right.
And it's a legitimate worth. And so that's typically how escrow works too. So for them to be like, hey, we're going to start from ground zero with who? And she was the busiest one in Chicago and she's young and ambitious and structures her activities in a manner that suits and serves her clients. And so there are hours of the day that you are available for phone calls. And there's hours of the day that you are working. And so not everybody wants to do that.
Right.
And so that's where the separator is like, hey, if we jump and jump blindly with 2 feet, can we do it? And so we did. And that's where I was able to say, hey, let's do this, but we could have a greater impact if we bring an escrow closer. So from there, it was like, okay, let's do this. Let's just jump and do it and figure it out. Conversations went really quick because as leadership changed, the conversation and the value points that First American has, I was like, okay, this is a no-brainer.
So it's you had the skills, you had the ambition, and the stars were starting to kind of align.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. And timing is everything because we jumped with a lot of support from our coworkers.
Really?
Yes, because most of them recognize hard work. Most of them recognize my ability that I played as a title officer to communicate with their clients. Like, they understood and respected the fact that when I was doing a sales job at my previous employer, when escrow asked for something, I got it done. And so for them, and in their age, they're all like, hey, we're looking at retirement, and we wish we had the timing that you had, because the timing doesn't come, you know, it doesn't come all the time.
Right.
Like, you give it another 5-6 years, you're going to have enough young talent that you're going to have to bolster that young talent, and no one's going to be looking out. You know, they're going to, once you replace all the people, you're set for. And so that's where we're like, okay, if we're going to bring a new option, if we're going to strike out, if we're going to start calling people and try to win their business, we might as well do it at our prime. And so we did. We're like,
this is going to be the next 30 years.
And it was way more scarier for my escrow closer than for me.
Really?
She left 100 deals on the desk to go to zero.
Oh, yeah.
And zero turns into 5, 10. And you're like, I need a whole lot more than 10. You know, and then it's ramping up because the human that she is and the service she provides, people are like, okay, it's not, I mean, you could, even insurance anywhere or in any industry, even agents, you know, they move from one office to another because they want the resources and tools they have to maximize. But the human is still the same human. And so people were like, hey, I want to close with this person. And now they want to close with this person because it's so much better and cheaper in situations. And the service and quality is predictable. So all those little things make us a little different. So we could create.
You said you guys started from like zero market share 6 months ago.
Yep.
Where are you guys ballpark right now?
13. Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's encouraging for me because most of, you know, loyalties are, you know, we found out that there's a lot of loyalties to the other company because of history. Mm-hmm. So we have to make new loyalties, you know, new something. So it is, it's a lot of it falls on me to bring new business to Shea.
So to that point then, what do you find has been historically for the last 6 months, mm-hmm. the biggest challenge in this whole startup that you've encountered?
Oh, reaching out to enough people.
Really?
Yeah. Like I cold call and I call and I do all the things. But I'm only one man, and so I have to, especially with our getting a rent, I have to scale differently. So I'm really good at one-on-one, and it's interesting, and I could have those meetings, but I need volume. And so I have a difficulty getting in front of big audiences. But the big audiences that I've been able to capture have been very fruitful because now people are like, I'm trying to not be invisible. And we're still a little bit invisible to a few certain people in the industry. So that's the challenge for me. It's like, okay, how do I reach the most amount of people?
So how have your, because that's a problem with marketing then.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you guys market yourselves? Because I know with insurance agents, they're really restricted with how they can even sell themselves.
100%. We are like, I'm restricted to $100 per agent a year. That's really all the money I could spend. And if I was to give you a gift, it can't be greater than $5. So my lunch, I could only have 3 lunches with a client before I'm like, hey, we're coming up to, maybe I could buy you a soda because we're coming up to $100. And I've met with you and your team and now we've had meetings and now I can't even bring you a coffee and we have 6 months left. And so it's tough to market. That is a game we have to play. But I bring resources. And so sometimes it is about meeting and hearing people and then having a way to meet them. There's lots of ways.
Sounds like a lot of networking then.
Yeah. And I'm doing something new in my role. In the role, the fact that I think outside the box and I'm like, yes, it's great for me. And like when you talk to my competitor, she's learning how to socialize with the real estate agents, and there's an art to that because they're salesmen who don't want to be sold to, so they smell it a mile away. And I don't blame them for not wanting to talk to me sometimes because they've always been sold, and I'm not here to sell people. Where I want to discover how to help people. And that takes some time because there are very low hanging fruit that I could pitch to people. But my job is to pitch to as many people as I can, because when they do bite, some people want to gobble up that apple really quick and they're like, whoa, I didn't even know this was an option. Some people are like, let me test out the waters and then we'll inch into the relationship.
Mm. And so have you guys found that we've talked about legacy relationships because mm-hmm. some people have been doing work with their title and escrow companies for like 20 years.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Have you guys found much success in pursuing those kinds of clients?
Yes. Mm. Yes. And this is where I want to encourage all other entrepreneurs. Big sharks don't get called on. Because everyone's intimidated.
Really?
Big sharks, like people who do lots of business, don't typically get approached because there's this fear. And on their end, they're very quick to dismiss. In my experience, title companies here have only played, like the sales reps, like in my position, account managers, they've played a very social role. And some people who time their activities to an ROI have no place to play a role with me. They just want to go to my escrow closer because that's the business they want. And what if they don't know my escrow closer, but they've used the other company? So how do I do? Well, I've been able to win big accounts because if I can make you 2-3 more listings and you list 800 above, I've had people say, I've never had a title company make me so much money. Mm. And I'm like, huh. But I didn't do anything. That professional did all the things they have to do to hustle and make their approach to their prospects valuable. And so what I do, I just find them good prospects, or I help their approach, or I bring this value that saves them time and money. And for them, they're like, well, we could maximize.
Right.
Or going further, it's good for me to reach out to my agents, but they're not the ones buying houses. I have a lot of friends locally, like yourself, becoming a friend where I can't benefit from you, but how can I use my tools and skill set and network to grow your business? Because the more you grow, your chances are you're going to build wealth through real estate. Mm-hmm. And if you grow wealth through real estate, well, that's where I come in, and I hope to earn your business. And so are you an ADU builder? Because I could find you every homeowner that has the space to actually put an ADU, mm-hmm. and they have 80% equity. So they don't have to sell their house. They have the place to invest. And so instead of walking down, or let's go further with that same example. What if you're an ADU builder who wants 2,000 square feet on a lot? They have 80% equity or more. So only people who have paid off most of the mortgages. And they have to be on the left side of the street because that's where the view is. Everything else is a sheer cliff like it is on like the South Hill. Well, I have an ADU builder who took a list of, you know, used our tools to maximize his business because he only talked to 20 people instead of 400 people.
Right.
And he had 20 quality conversations and made 3 deals out of that.
That's good.
So then he was able to say, hey, I'm going to buy this fixer-upper, put an ADU on it, condominiumize it, and make 2 transactions out of it. And they're going to go to Sergi because he got me here. And I'm thinking, well, that took 1.5 years and it didn't pay me at all until it paid me at the very end. And so some of my jobs, like I was a firefighter. We kind of talked about it. Mm-hmm. So like, does my agent have someone in their sphere that could benefit from my tools? Yes, they probably do. Mm-hmm. And if you could help a friend grow in their business, it's like, I read a book called The Go Giver instead of The Go Getter. Cause everyone's a go getter. Mm-hmm. Sure. You could take money from anyone.
Oh yeah.
But are you a go giver? And where's the value point? So if you could, and I believe in like, I'm going to give as much as I can because I know statistically it's going to come to me and it's coming to me. Mm-hmm. Because something like what we mentioned in one of the podcasts earlier, where I've had people who are 30 years into this job saying, how come no one's given me this? How come no one talked to me like that? Or this is available? Like, is this even like people are like, is this even legal? well, yeah, because you accept the cookie data. And then is your title company buying that and making it available to you? Maybe they all are. Everyone has tools. Mm-hmm. But is their sales rep learning enough to bring you value? Like we talked about earlier, where First American plays cooperatively, where I go down to Bellevue, I go to Seattle, and I learn from people who do business differently because principles are applicable. And so if we're, and that's changed how I bring value to my clients.
And it's not even like an esoteric karma thing with where what comes goes around comes around eventually. No, there's a pretty pragmatic evaluation of that.
Yeah, because man, I don't want to give away too much. Okay, because I could search homes with a certain feature. Mm. Now that feature gets purchased by the homeowner typically two times, a year after ownership because they realize, whoa, we really need this feature. Or after 3 years of ownership because their PMI and their mortgage just dropped off and then they have an extra $230 to spend and they're like, we want that feature.
Right.
It's a 3 year mark. So if you're selling this feature, you don't want to talk to every homeowner because they're not the demographic that has the place or capacity to do it. But if you could target market specific and then approach them with a systematic approach that works to prime the interaction with you. Because if they hear about you and see you and know you before they actually hear from you and talk to you and meet you, your chances of success on the conversion on that interaction is significantly higher.
Oh, it's huge.
Huge. Mm-hmm. So do you have a practice in your business to do that? Or do agents do that? Agents are individual contractors. They either get on a team and someone provides them that tool or they're figuring it out on their own. Or their brokerage provides it. Not everyone uses all the tools. Not everyone has a team. Some people are doing it completely solo where I come in and say, hey, let me help you out. You don't have to. I don't need your marketing dollar. I just want you to be more successful so that way I could be more successful. I mean, we only get paid when you get paid. And so that's the incentive's there.
And it's, there's this sentiment that like, especially when it comes to cookie data, where it's like predatory for the clients, for the people who make it. I'm sure there are times where that's the case, but oftentimes when someone's buying a home, especially for first time home buyers, that's an exciting moment. Mm-hmm. That's a huge step in their development. And the more tools and resources that their professionals have to make that happen, the better for them.
Well, we have resources for buyers, for home buyers. We have materials that explain what it is, make terms relatable in 37 different languages. Mm. Because as a kid who translated, be like, I don't know what the auditor's office word is in Russian. I don't know how to explain a deed or a conveyance or reconveyance or a number of terms that you're like, those are specialty terms. Yeah. I don't. Does the Punjabi agent know how to say that in Punjabi? My history with no, they don't. It's a very funny, complex set of words for the same concept.
Yeah.
And so to translate, I'm like, hey, give this to your client. And the response has been kind of similar to what I showed you earlier, where it's like, whoa, this puts us on an even playing field on conversations. Now we all know how to use the words of like closing and signing are different days. Why? Well, the signing is the signing. And then the closing is the recording date when the money gets all transferred and all that happens. It doesn't happen on the same day every day. Mm-hmm. So like, can you communicate that expectation to someone who doesn't understand the language? That's tough. First American has a resource for that. So that's been very fun. And so that's just one glimmer of where like the title company should do whatever they can to make your client's experience top notch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So coming back to the entrepreneurial angle a little bit more explicitly.
Yeah.
You guys have grown to 13% market share. What do you think, besides you guys have a special offering, but like on you specifically, is there a habit?
Oh, yeah.
Is there like a personal doctrine that you have? What do you think has made you that successful in your field?
Well, we mentioned it earlier. I've got two superpowers. Mm-hmm. I always keep promises I make to myself. Mm. And so I don't make promises to myself often, but when I do, I always keep them. That gives me a lot of confidence. Mm. And I time block. Like last year, I'm in the middle of an experiment in my life, aren't we all? But last year, I time blocked every 15 minutes, like really strictly. Like every 15 minutes of my life was already drawn out.
Wow.
I did it successfully and I got the results that I wanted. However, the results and the values didn't match up. So this year, I'm taking a complete different approach where I'm blocking it in three chunks of my day. So the morning is always the past. So in the morning, I start work. I wake up early every day, 4 o'clock, 4:09. And at 4:10, I'm already late because it takes me 12 minutes to get out of the house, to brush my teeth, use a restroom, get dressed before my conscious brain kicks in. So sometimes, like this morning, I was driving being like, what am I doing? Regardless, I do. I'm religious about waking up early and getting my workout, whatever that looks like. And then at 7 o'clock, I'm working. Now, no agent or lender is working at 7 o'clock. They are typically 9-10 risers or operators. Some of them start early and, you know, it varies because they're entrepreneurs as well. Mm. I start at 7 and I write thank you cards. I have a goal of 260 thank you cards
for this year. And I'm well on my way on there because every morning I wake up and practice gratitude. And so at work, I have my CRM, my Salesforce, who tells me this is who I've interacted with. This is who sent us a deal. This is who we closed. And I'm writing thank you cards every single day. Every single day. If I miss, I'm tracking this. If I miss, I make up for it. Now, there's reasons to miss, and sometimes you have to. But every single day. So that gives my kids the opportunity to see me at home because they go to, you know, we get up and leave around 8:30. So an hour and a half, they see me working, writing thank you cards. So I dual purpose there. And then in the evening, okay, so then the second part of my day is to be present. So after this, I eat lunch. I pause. I do all the errand running that I have to do because the second part of my day is the future. And so I prospect in the afternoons. I then end my day with family because the family is the future. And then at 8 o'clock, I start another process of my future. I got to get my clothes ready because it gives me, I only got 12 minutes to get out of the house in the morning. So that means everything has to be laid out. And so it is a little crazy, but I master my time.
It's super structured.
I master my time. If I don't get to something like today, I didn't get to a couple emails. I don't have the, like, I'm working for the future this afternoon. So that email now has to wait. Now, do I have to adjust my life to make sure that I get my emails out? Maybe. I could have done it, but I then have to embrace the suck of having an email be delayed. But those are the lickings I'll have to take. And so it's the approaches, whatever it is, the consequences. But I have to be like, no, now it's the future. 2 o'clock comes around. If I don't have an appointment, I'm probably going to be calling at any given time. If my day gets derailed or if anything happens, if I'm in within a certain time slot of the day, I know exactly what I have to do. And so that gives me a little bit of more dynamic ability to fluctuate and not so 15 minutes. But if you could master your time, you could master your, like I have complete agency over my life. Sure, things happen, but I could adapt and pivot. And if I could control the beginning and the end of my day, I'm not reacting, I'm responding. Because I know that whatever goes in at work, I'm going to end my day the same way I ended it yesterday. I'm going to get up the same way I did today as a fresh start. So I know. Mm-hmm. So I minimize my volatility there a little of that.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So that keeps me successful because no one could keep up with that.
No, that's true. I mean, I've very rarely have I met someone who's successful financially that doesn't at least try to wake up for six.
Mm.
There's the odd exception, of course, but I don't, there's something to just having that disciplined, consistent life. It doesn't have to be monotonous,
mm-mm,
but you kind of have an idea of, I know what I need. I know what I need to be successful in a day.
Well, and then a lot goes into it because we all, like I'm guilty, and I think all humans are, of finding ways to cheat, even to yourself.
Mm.
It's like, do you really have the time to cook? Or you can just stop by fast food really quick. Like, you got all these other things. Or do you say, I screwed up managing my time and now fast food's my only option? I have to manage my time a little better.
Right.
Or do you just always make excuses? Like, I make excuses for myself all the time. You have to be okay with the excuses you make, because once you make an excuse, you have a conscious awareness of that decision. So sometimes, like, I want to be a poet someday in my life, but I have to consciously be like, not until I'm retired, because I want to give it all. Right. So to me, that's an example of like, I need to do this. So I made a promise to myself. So I have to do these things. And so there's a big component of mastering your life. Absolutely. Success.
But yeah. It's like, are you a slave to your vices or do you dominate them?
Oh yeah. Cause there's place for vices. I make time for vices because if you don't, you kind of go crazy.
Yeah. No, like, you kind of need an outlet.
Yeah.
At a certain point in time, sometimes you just need to sit down.
Oh, yeah. Well, I come from a fire service where everything, I had a chief who was like, man, you can do whatever you want as long as you have a reason to do it. Mm. So it's better ask for forgiveness than permission. So I was like, okay, always have a reason to do. So what are you doing right now? For why is the reason what you're doing right now is what you're doing? Do that all the time. I did a year of 15-minute increments of my life, and I realized, yo, I just waste a lot. So I got really good of like, hey, this is how I'm going to structure my morning. This is how I'm going to structure this to serve me, because I love autopilots. When something goes amiss or array or something funny, I default to the fact that I trust my autopilot And it serves me really well because I know that I've set up systems in my life that, like, you know, this is it.
Just intuitively, you can trust that you'll be kind of kept on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's like, I don't know, Jocko, if you listen to Jocko, but he talks about
Jocko Willink, like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to be like a
Navy SEAL.
Navy SEAL.
He talks about the freedom and the discipline, and I'm like, yes, there's a lot of freedom in the discipline because I, for instance, start at 7. At 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, if I'm free and available, I'm walking by the waterfront because I want the negative ions. That fits into my transition to my next part. And then at 2 o'clock, I'm walking in the forest because I want to be forest bathing. Now, before I start forest bathing, no, I take this back. I start at 2, and at 3 o'clock, I know that I'm going to do dirt time. So I ground myself. So I believe personally that we live very unnatural lives with all the technology and cell phones that we have to do things to bring us back to that. So I do a lot of practices that allow me to ground and relax and release. And so meditation, prayer, time with just, I call it dirt time, where I sit on the ground and don't think about anything. Time it 5 minutes at a time, just release. And then for me, I do it in the forest. So I'm like, okay, I'm popping back up and I'm making my phone calls. Right. I'm gonna call for another hour and a half. And like when I make my phone calls, what are people going to do? Reject me and say no and say mean things. I'm still walking in the forest in the happiest place in the world in my prime. So next call.
Yeah. It's funny. There's almost like a religious idea into that where it's going back to the Jocko Willink line. It was a freedom in the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where I heard a line once where freedom is only a value insofar as it allows you to choose what to submit to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always loved that sentiment. And it's a very Christian thought too, but it's absolutely true. Like you can be absolutely free and spend your time just lounging in the forest and you're free to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But what good is it unless you are in control of it, using it for a good.
For intentional.
Intentionally, yeah.
I've decided a long time ago that I'm going to live a very intentional life because people are just hanging on life by a thread.
Oh yeah.
So I served 12 years on an ambulance where I saw some stuff where I'm like, we're all lucky to live. And so live your life intentionally. So if you decide to smoke a bunch of weed,
mm-hmm.
is that like, why? Mm-hmm. Why are you doing it?
Self-examine.
And then if you realize, like, and then you come to a point where you make it, you become aware, like you have awareness or something, and you either choose to accept it or you change it
mm-hmm.
at every aspect of your life. Like, I'm getting married in September. We just saw our venue this weekend and I'm like, yo, it just became real to me. So I have to actually get into shape. Like, or I do work out all the time, not to get skinny. So people are like, I'm like, no, I do it for the mental health. Okay. I eat I run a marathon every day. So that's why I look the way I do. So, but that's a value point. Like However, those little tiny little motivators of like, sorry about that again. I talk with my hands. Those little things, what do you do and why do you do it? Mm-hmm. Like if you could refine, you find that you could find a lot of freedom. Like I could find time to relax and read and decompress because I know that I have a system in place to get the things that serve me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important.
That's brilliant.
Yep.
All right. Before we close out, any final parting words of wisdom to anyone who might be listening?
Oh, you know, yes. I'm learning something that you have to believe two things. You have to believe in your value, in yourself. Because then when you approach people, you're not selling them. Mm. You're giving them another option. To me, I'm always like, okay, I'm learning that people have options. And to pigeonhole them into some sort of sales tactic is not the right way to do it. But to become an option, that means you have to be fearless. Like there's a lot of aspects to like, can I give advice? Don't be fearful. What's the worst thing to happen? I've done CPR on a little baby. I've done CPR on old people. That's the worst case scenario. Like I have people bleed out and people choke and people die in front of you. Like that is worst case scenario. Everything short of that or people shoot at me. I've never had people shoot at me, I suppose. Or, you know, I've never, but like there are actual fears. And 90% of our fears will actually never actuate. So things that we make up in my, like I, a few years ago, I self-examined myself by thinking like, what lies do I tell myself? And I quickly realized I live in fear, a lot more fear than I thought. Like, I'm pretty fearless, but then you start looking at your thoughts and you're like, well, that was a fear-driven response. Or especially cold calling. You know, people are like, oh, they don't want to hear from me and I don't want to interrupt their day, or it's embarrassing, I don't have a message, or whatever excuse you come up in your head. I have the same excuses, but I also have an experience bank that 90% of those excuses have never actually been verbalized to me.
Right.
Some of them have. And then to me, I'm like, that's funny. Like, it's like, yeah, you don't want to call someone and then upset them for disrupting their day. And I have. And people get upset and use choice words. And in my mind, I'm like, bro, you could have not answered.
Yeah, that's a good way, inverting how it's viewed.
Like, that's not me. And then I'm like, calling the next person. And the next person says, oh my God, good timing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, see, so every fear I had just got outweighed by the experience that I just experienced. So I want to tell people, if I could have said, just be fearless. Nothing is going to punch you in the face unless you put yourself in that scenario. Like, everything else, man, be fearless and give value and believe in yourself. And I think from there, yeah, anything's possible.
That's great. Sometimes we all need to hear that, no matter how far along we are.
Sure.
All right. Well, Sergey, thank you again. Where can people find you?
You could definitely find me online. Google First American Whatcom County. They'll have my website on there and contact information. Feel free to text, email. Easy to find.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of A Businessman's Guide to Episode. No, I got that wrong. Thank you for tuning in to A Businessman's Guide to Everything. I've been your host, Cole Brzenji. We hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have, and we look forward for our next episode to come out. So, in that case, take care and be well.
Thank you.